Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Superman! Four-year-old Benji squealed, running around the room with a bath towel draped around his shoulders. Benji, I need that! His seven-year-old sister Megan called. If you give me that towel, you can have this whole pile of socks to sort. There are red and blue ones in the pile. Red socks, blue socks, one socks, two socks, sang Benji. Wow, their mom's friend Jan poked her head around the corner from the kitchen. I'm really impressed. How'd you get these two to help with the laundry? You do know about the child labor laws, right? She said with a wink. Oh, said their mom Brenda as she put the last of the dishes away and hung up the dish towel. I just thought there'd be things they could do around the house that would help them feel big and important, and I could get some help in the bargain. Well, I gotta hand it to you, Jan replied. You know how to get your troops moving. But what can they do exactly that's helpful? Don't forget, Brenda smiled. Megan's at that wonderful stage where she wants to do what I do. So she's learned to sort dark and light laundry and fold the smaller stuff. Of course, Benji's happy just to carry the laundry basket, dump out the contents, and even try to match some of the kids' more colorful socks.
I have just one question, Jan responded. Could I rent them sometime?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about building kids' competence at home? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a child development specialist with much interest in children's self-esteem and competence. Barbara Strom Thompson has had broad experience in the child advocacy, early childhood, and parent education fields. She has supervised a state daycare licensing program, taught at the university level, worked with at-risk and abusive parents, served as a child care educational coordinator, consulted on employer-supported child care, planned playgrounds, and provided technical assistance and training on a wide range of aspects of child care and early education. For the last 20 years, Barbara has conducted worksite seminars on family life topics, presented parenting classes at a variety of venues, and consulted extensively with parents and schools on children's learning and behavior. She's founder and director of the Parent Encouragement Program's Friendship Camp, which has promoted leadership and social skills that once happened frequently in neighborhood play, but that has become all too rare in today's adult-directed play culture. As a volunteer, Barbara has served on boards of associations and foundations. She's a contributing author to the new book, Like Whatever, The Insider's Guide to Raising Teens, and she is the mother of a grown daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Barbara.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So why is a child's sense of competence linked to his or her self-esteem?
Well, self-esteem and competence are inextricably linked. Oftentimes when I'm working with parents and teachers, I find myself using the words interchangeably because competence is really the road to increased self-esteem. It's the pathway. We can't talk children into feeling good about themselves. The self-esteem movement was started for very good reasons. I went to school at a time where there were some harsh practices for children, and for good reason, we've started to pay a lot of attention to that. But the pendulum swung too far, and we're telling children, terrific, great job, and we think we can use words to help them feel good about themselves. Self-esteem is based on competence and contribution. And those are two ways that children can demonstrate that they belong and that they can help shape the social order. Another word that I like parents to think about is resilience. Because if we only focus on the competence, a lot of adults look at the end product. And we're talking about, did you master this? And with children and their developmental levels, they might have years of effort going into something that they love doing before they have mastery. So with all of our children, they're going to get themselves in trouble. They're going to disappoint themselves and others. And so as parents, we want to focus on their resilience also.
That's a tall order, isn't mm-hmm.
it? It is a tall order. Yeah. But I think if you have that overarching idea of what your goal is when your child leaves home, that they're prepared, that they have a good work ethic, that they see themselves as problem solvers, that they have a good task persistence, then I think just taking it baby steps at a time. The wonderful thing about the topic of competence at home is that the smallest things can make a big difference. And that we don't have to start with, okay, the child needs to clean up the playroom every time that they're down there. But just start out with picking up the Legos. And that the child learns where they go and they match them with the bin with the Lego picture. And that before you go upstairs, they pick those up. And if they don't, after a while, if the Legos aren't picked up and I have to pick them up, says the mother, then they're going to go in the attic for a day. The child learns that they need to listen and they need to have the self-control to pick those up. Over time, the 8-year-old can pick up the whole playroom. But I think a lot of times parents get the concept. They want to raise responsible children, but then they start all gung-ho and it's just too much. We need to break the steps down for children in terms of the responsibilities or even in the social competence that we want to coach them on.
Can you give some examples of ways that kids can feel competent that parents can sort of latch on to as we sort of go down this road?
Definitely the self-care in terms of when the children are even, let's say, 4, in terms of having the clothes laid out in the evening so that the child can help make choices. But just starting with small things like that so that the child understands that he shapes the social order. And really, all of our children want to be big shots. And so that's really what I'm asking parents to look at is how can we find ways where children can demonstrate all that they're capable of? I once had a father come to see me because he was having some difficulties with his 9-year-old son. And this father was a therapist. And there were a lot of power plays in the home. And I got the sense that the child was discouraged and they just weren't connecting. And so we talked for an hour and we were running a little late. As he was going out the door, I said, one more thing. Start cooking with your son. And he kind of gave me a funny look. I'm not a therapist or a counselor. I don't see people weekly. And in my business, a lot of times, no news is good news. If I've helped them, I might not see them for a year or so. But he came back in 6 months, and the first thing he said to me was, how did you know it was the cooking that was going to make the difference? That night, after he saw me, he started barbecuing with his son. And it's almost like all the power plays went away because the child felt so trusted. If you think about discipline, and I don't use discipline in a way that's punitive or negative, I think that's a gift to give children self-control, where they understand that they can control themselves. And that's about having positive power. Well, when a child has negative power, I don't only want to make that go away. I want to give the child more power. So when a child is, say, the toddlers who are known for this, me do it. I'm always looking at ways, what can they do themselves? It might just be butter their own toast or pour their own milk in a little tiny measuring cup. Right then, I'm going to have a more cooperative toddler because I'm showing them in the self-care that I allow them to demonstrate that I trust them.
So the competence really goes hand in hand with autonomy.
Yes.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on building competence at home.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Barbara Strom Thompson about building children's competence at home.
Would you say there are fewer opportunities outside of the self-care for youngsters to acquire skills today than in earlier times that help build their sense of competence?
Definitely. And particularly, I would say starting at 7 and 8, where their play life is so circumscribed that there aren't children playing in the neighborhood outside. Free and voluntary play. And a lot of parents are looking for supervision of their children. And what they choose often is adult-directed activities so that the child goes from a school day and then they're going to basket making or flute lessons or soccer practice. Those are very, very different experiences than when children used to just kind of show up and there might be seven kids and should they play softball or soccer or build a fort. And all that negotiating and coming up with their own ideas. And once the play falls apart, figuring out how to make a joke or ask for help, get the play to gel again. Those are crucial for children's sense of self-esteem and their sense of building community. I hear parents who grieve over that loss of neighborhood play, but we're not putting things in its place. And a lot of times, I think being a little more creative, and even in terms of how we spend our time as families, entertaining mixed age groups, some of the families that I've worked with who notice this lack with their children and see kind of the social ramifications of that. In the summer, rather than sending their children to a big camp where they're going from activity to activity, hire a teacher for a couple weeks and have a backyard camp with six or seven children, mixed age groups. We can replicate that, even in the way we choose vacations. With the increased screen time of TV and computers and also adult-directed time, I almost feel like we're training our children for passivity.
That's a very scary thought, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah. Is there a difference in a child's self-esteem between acquiring screen time skills, computer and video game kind of skills, and the kinds of skills that we were talking about earlier about self-directed kinds of things, household chores and what have you?
Well, there's a big difference. And actually, when I talk about computers, I use the word screen time because really until the child is over nine, and also unless the child is programming the computer, it's the opposite of that play, that intrinsic motivation. It's actually imitation. So that time that they're spending where the machine is setting the parameter of the game, the child misses that opportunity to be an inventor, to come up with their own ideas. There's something quite optimistic or rewarding for a child to realize, no one thought of this rule of this game before. I came up with this. I have something very important to offer. And I don't see that same reaction with children who are especially heavy users of screen time. The other thing that I worry about is for a child to really have a strong sense of belonging in a group and engagement, they need to read a lot of nonverbal cues. And if two boys are sitting there playing a game side by side, their eyes are focused on the screen. They're not watching each other. It's very different than two children playing a card game and thinking, does he have his poker face on or not? And so that whole nonverbal communication, our kids really need to have that unstructured time where adults may be supervising, but they're not directing it.
I've seen in younger generations today, my children's generation, for example, they get together with other families. We used to do a lot of play group things, and the children played, and the mothers might sit and have coffee or whatever, but it wasn't the same as what I'm seeing. They have families over, and those families may have children older and younger than my grandchildren, and yet they all manage to interact and socialize. They eat, they play. It seems very healthy. It seems like a recapturing of what I remember as a child.
Yes, and I am a big advocate of those mixed age groups. If you think about when children would go out and play, the 12-year-old would have to kind of look out for the kindergartner. And in those kind of mixed age groups, children learn both about leadership and being a follower. They learn about negotiating, and they seek out the person who can demonstrate that for them. So it's wonderful. I actually have a number of families that I work with whose children have trouble making friends. And one of the things that I ask parents to do is to do that kind of entertaining and for the child to think ahead about, well, what do you think so-and-so would like to play with? Are there any toys we need to put away that could be dangerous or that you're not willing to share, so that the child gets practice in terms of thinking about extending himself or herself. Again, that goes to the sense of contribution. With smaller families, with families who don't live near their extended family, children have their own rooms, everyone has their own cell phone or phone, several TVs, we're not asking children to share or to delay their gratification or negotiate. So that kind of entertaining that goes on in terms of extending yourself, that's a really important social skill.
I have to make a confession.
one of my children, as an adult, when he was dating, was getting together with friends and they were making meals. He called me on the phone and said, "Mom, you have failed." And he started laughing. What did I do? I never taught him to set the table. Oh. I never asked my children to set the table. He said, and my date said, "Here's the silverware. Will you set the table?" He said, "I didn't know where to put everything."
Now, that's where the resilience comes in.
Yes, it did. He is a resilient one. What's the most important thing parents can do to foster a child's sense of competence?
At every developmental level, to be aware of what's reasonable and to stretch the child, but not push. It's easy to see in toilet training, for instance. There are wide ranges of when children physically are ready. But if we start too soon, it's more like the parent is trained, not the mm-hmm. child. And that undermines the child's self-concept. And also that the parent is so focused on the end product. I think then that child misses that sense of confidence, that every child wants to have enough times of the day where the parent's face lights up when they come in the room. And if we're constantly pushing a child beyond, the parent-child relationship gets undermined. I also think that parents need to have a goal that their child will gain expertise about themselves. It was a hard thing for me to do as a parent, to not be the expert on everything, to not give all this great advice that I thought I had for my child. Because the few times, you know, my daughter is in college now, and I actually was pretty good about not giving advice. But the two things I gave her advice about in college in terms of her classes, that was not good advice. And a lot of times we need to look at more the overarching view, but let the child develop the expertise. When you do have good advice as a parent to give, I always wait a day later. Let's say my daughter's talking about friendships or someone bullying on the playground or something like that. Listen for understanding. There's another step that's giving the advice. A lot of times parents jump in too quickly with the advice. The child doesn't even know what the real problem is. They haven't sorted it out by our listening. And then have a pause so that the child can come up with some ideas. That feels very respectful. And I always wait the next day and say, "I have some thoughts about what you were saying about that slumber party. Would you like to hear them?" Mm-hmm. I've never been denied, but it feels so respectful mm-hmm. of the child because I've given enough time to the child to think about it herself. And when people swoop in and solve the problem for children, we're trying to be helpful, but what we're really doing is circumscribing their problem solving. And we're telling them, "I don't think you're up to it."
Mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. word respectful mm-hmm. is a real it's cue wonderful. For all mm-hmm. of us because mm-hmm. of course we can show respect to young mm-hmm. children. We have mm-hmm. to remember to.
Yeah. It's funny, while we're talking about competence, I keep going back to the metaphor of riding the bicycle, where we know that the child will eventually learn to ride the bicycle. If we give the child a manual of how to do it, that's not going to be too helpful.
Exactly.
And we always think, you know, so, okay, we expect the child to fall off several times. We expect all these things. And the child expects that to happen and expects eventually to master this mm-hmm. in some way. And then there are lots of levels of mastery of this. And so I think it's very hard to watch the process, feeling as parents that we're responsible in some way and knowing where our responsibility really lies in the long run, which is not the right. short-term kinds of things.
When my daughter was a toddler and she was working the little shape board, and I love working with toddlers and I've done that a lot, I would never want to reach out and do that. But with my own daughter, I wanted her to just accomplish that so quick. It was really instructive for me to see professionally I knew what to do, but you do want to fix it for your child. But then that undermines the child's sense of task persistence, and they view it as, it's not my job. I think that's one of the hardest mm-hmm. things. And also, one of the things that we can do, I think, as we back off a little bit, is to help the child deal with the frustration and the mistakes. What we pay attention to as parents is what gets repeated. And so if we're only focused on when the child completes the puzzle, and in a research study, they even paid every time the child completed the puzzle. What they found was that kind of feedback actually undermined kids who loved puzzles because they're focusing on external. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is to focus on, you love puzzles. You've been working on that puzzle for 3 days. You're not giving up. That's a child who views himself as capable.
So everybody who's thinking about report cards right now.
Absolutely. Even if the child's gotten straight A's. Because if the child comes in and has this huge grin on his face and says, I got straight A's, you're so proud of yourself. But what I ask parents to do is to look at that. Be like a video camera. I see straight A's on this, and this is the one in biology that you worked so hard on, that group project, so that we're focusing on the effort. So mm-hmm. when the child comes without the straight A's, they know what's going to get recognized is what I care about. You loved art here. That project you did, what I enjoy and what I work on. If as parents we can cue into that and respond to that, we're really helping to build that confidence to be a really good learner.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on building competence at home.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Barbara Strom Thompson about building children's competence at home. Barbara, do you subscribe to the belief of family meetings?
I'm a big fan of family meetings. I think they provide wonderful structure and learning opportunities that really reflect how the world works. And I like it when the family meeting starts out with compliments. We want to raise optimistic children and children where the glass is half full versus half empty. But we need to teach children that so that they recognize when people help them. And so to start out with, okay, now compliments for mom and thank you for helping me make a snack for the slumber party, or compliments for Susie. And that people are recognizing what the person is working on, how they contributed, and what they're good at. And I actually do this in my friendship camps that I run too. And there are some children that have a very difficult time with this. But research has shown that this is an important way. It's like an inoculation against depression. And I like to make things really physical. Write it down. Have a record keeper so that you have a notebook about all the important good things that are happening in the family. And then I like it when parents and children rotate turns running the meeting and have a timer, keep it 20 to 30 minutes, no longer. And with really young children, it might be 15 minutes. But plan some family fun. When we first started our family meetings and it was my daughter's time to plan some family fun, I was a little worried. She was about 9 when we started. And I thought, oh no, she's going to want to go to Water World or something like that. She wanted to play a card game. A lot of times we're so squeezed out doing what mm-hmm. we think is important that we don't make time for that family fun. So that's a good way to get it on the schedule once a week, and then you write it on your calendar. I'm a big believer in family calendars. It helps children feel very well cared for, to look up and have the little sticker for the soccer practice or when the birthdays are coming. And it helps them become more competent. And then to talk about chores and what needs to be done. And there are a lot of ways to do that. But I think what I like, especially for parents who feel like they don't have time to really get this started, or they've tried, they've had a lot of false starts, I like just sometime, maybe it might be during a family meeting, to have everyone go around the house and look at some jobs that need to be done. It could be pick up sticks in the yard, or, you know, organize the bottom shelf in the pantry, and just put them in a little can. Everyone draws one, set a timer for 10 or 15 minutes, and come back. It's amazing how much you can get done have your family snack. It's a way of celebrating that when our family works together, when we cooperate, we have more fun.
Well, unfortunately, our time is running out, and before we close, we would like to ask if there are any resources that you would suggest to our listeners who want to pursue further some of these issues.
Definitely. We talked about television and screen time. I will lump those with the computers. And I really like the book Unplugging the Plug-in Drug by Marie Wynn. And what I like about that is I encourage parents associations and schools to work on a no TV week. If you do it with some other families, it becomes really
socially acceptable.
It's socially acceptable. Also to focus not only on we're not going to do this, but what is this going to open up time for? So rather than say Wednesday's no TV day, Wednesday is family board game day. So that's one resource that I really like. Because teaching children's self-control is so much a part of promoting high self-esteem, I recommend Jane Nelson's work, Positive Discipline. Her last name is Nelsen. And really, anything she writes is very sound and helpful and pragmatic for parents. And then there's one more resource that I recommend, and it's called Growing Child Newsletter. And I love this because when the child is 36 months, you get a newsletter. It can be mailed or online. And you get information about that month. You can learn about that at growingchild.com.
Well, we have learned about an awful lot of things today. So, Barbara Strom-Thompson, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to understand and maybe implement some things that will help our child's growing competence.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of the new book, Like Whatever, The Insider's Guide to Raising Teens, a compendium of parenting topics with an essay by Barbara Strom-Thompson. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 365 and tell us, if you can, what station you are tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.